Greetings, Hodel. This is Bob Rouse, your host of the Grace Radio series Voices. This adventure in programming for Grace Radio features the voices of our neighbors here in Slidell about matters of community interest. And today our guest is John Case, a businessman in Slidell, been here for a long time, kind of an import from Mississippi, but he's here and he's a part of us, and we want to talk with him this morning about his new book, Saucered Coffee, Blued and Cool. John, welcome.
Thank you, Bob. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you, sir. New book, this is your second book, isn't it?
Second book, correct.
Great. And you've recently received an award that I think was pretty interesting.
Yeah, Bob, it was an award that was presented by the Press Club of New Orleans, and it was Best Writer in the column division, not the editorial, the column division.
Okay.
And the reason that they call my short stories columns is because they're published on a regular basis in a publication.
Okay.
So that's why that was able to fit into that category. But I was very surprised and very pleased, and I thank the organization for the honor.
So that was through the Slidell magazine that's published here in town.
That is correct. It is, and they're the award winner too, both the magazine and the writer.
Oh, great. Great. Well, that magazine has certainly made an impact in the community. You see it just about everywhere you go, and the content is just excellent.
She's done a great job. She's come from nothing. In fact, she could very well drop in on an interview. She's supposed to be in this neck of the woods sometime this morning. Yesterday was her birthday. But we're talking about Kendra Manis, and she's done a fantastic job with the magazine. And I want to talk about that a minute. November the 10th. The city is, I guess you would say the city, is sort of sponsoring a celebration for her 100th edition of the magazine.
Really?
It's going to be on a Friday night, and she's going to have the covers of all 100 magazines on display, and there's going to be bands and fun, and they're doing that because she has promoted the city. There's no question.
Excellent, excellent. Well, it's a great publication, been around for 99, it comes out monthly?
Comes out monthly.
So this is 100 months?
Right.
Wow, that's a pretty big undertaking.
Mm-hmm. And I have written one each month, starting with the 11th month, so I've done 89 now. I've done 89 months, and I never thought I'd have done it. Didn't think I could do it.
Sounds great.
You know,
great.
Bob, this is a live interview here, and don't be surprised if the phone rings or someone walks in, and there comes Miss Kendra Manis right now. We were just talking about her.
Well, welcome, Miss Kendra Manis. So glad to see you.
Thank you. Hi, guys.
We were just talking about the Slidell magazine.
Good.
John was just telling me a little bit about it. We'll expand the interview a little bit. This is Kendra Manis, the publisher, owner, editor, and probably every part of the Slidell magazine. So,
well, I wouldn't say every part of, because I have a great staff of writers.
Okay.
Got him right here.
And you're coming up on your 100th anniversary, 100th edition.
Yes, the big 100. We just went to print on it yesterday. It'll be released on November 1st, and then November 9th, we have an art show that the mayor and the city of Slidell are hosting us.
Really?
It's an art show and block party in front of City Hall, and we'll have music and food, and in the City Hall Cultural Arts Center, there will be the 100 covers displayed, and most of the artists that have done the covers will be there signing copies. It's going to be a nice event.
It sounds like a wonderful event.
Thank you.
And congratulations on 100 editions. John was just telling me he's been there since number 11.
Number 12.
Number 12. Okay.
What, are you trying to give yourself more credit?
Yeah, I'll try to give myself more credit. Sure.
No, he came along at the one-year anniversary, and previous to John writing for us, I would say that we were a small publication, and a couple of people read us, and mostly they just complimented me because they wanted to make me feel better. And then John came along, and it changed everything. He got a following, and people started remembering his stories and then looking forward to the next edition. And so the storyteller is really the backbone of the magazine.
This past weekend, I was hosting a cemetery tour for the First Presbyterian Church, sort of a Founders Day, and I reflected back to a meeting I had with Mayor Sam Caruso about Slidell, and that was 20-plus years ago. And we talked about the fact that Slidell tended to lack a sense of community, and what could we do about that? And we realized that Slidell was made of so many different cultures. People came here with Boeing and people came from Seattle, and all of a sudden a town of 5,000 locals became a town of 30,000 with no common ground, and therefore a sense of community did not form. But we decided that we could do something about that with getting everyone involved in the history of Slidell. And I started trying to do that 20 years ago, a little at a time. And I certainly in no way was the founder of GOSH, but it was one of those efforts. Revitalization of Old Town, which my wife is very much involved in, that's one of those efforts that came out of that. And now I think we do have a sense of community. Just like Kendra said, she came back here, you know, and she puts out that magazine and people read it, people that are engineers, people that are welders. This very, very week, I had the most interesting thing happen. My car overheated, and I called the people that usually tow it, AAA, and they could not find it. So I had to get to work, and I caught a ride to a local record dealer here. And I left my keys and said, go get it, and I'll bring you a bill. You know me. And I went to take the bill, and they said, you don't owe us a penny. You don't owe us a penny. I said, why? I said, we like the magazine.
Really?
True story. I'm putting in a plug for Eddie's, by the way.
Well, Eddie's been here about as long as you have.
They've been here longer than me. There's no question about it. But they said, we just like the magazine. They said, it's the first thing we look at it. So anyway, I think that from a record driver to an engineer, we have made a sense of community, and I think the magazine's had a lot to do with it, and I hope I've had something to do with it.
Well, I think you have. I'm sure the magazine has had an impact in the community, and of course, every time I turn around, there's a John Case standing there doing something for somebody somewhere. And I appreciate you and appreciate the culture of our community. It's a very giving community. The magazine, of course, is a free magazine, right, which just kind of exemplifies people doing stuff because they love it. And then we get behind each other, got you back type stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think it just makes our community work the way it needs to work.
I think so too, Bob. There's been some involvement in my position in the magazine, or at least the way I feel. I started writing history. That didn't last long because I didn't have the time to put into it. Doesn't mean I won't do a historical article from now and then, but that's not the mainstay. Then I started doing, I guess you would say, fictional spoofs that were interesting, but maybe funny or catchy. But I would like to go to things that have more meaning. You know, I would really like to make more of an impact.
When he says things with more meaning, that means meaning to him. I think that your writing has a great impact on people. And we don't even realize that. And we don't even know it's happening until after it's published. And people come up and say, my God, that affected me so deeply, and I could relate to that.
Bob, I know that the radio station's content is of a religious nature, and I really appreciate that. And I think that's what I'm trying to say. I would like to be able to leave somebody with a message, sort of like a minister does, something you can take home with you. And I've tried to change that. And they're not necessarily theological. I don't mean that. I'm not qualified to do that. But I like to give them a thought, and maybe not a happy thought, because, you know, life's not always happy, but it needs to be addressed, and that's what I'd like to do.
I think you're exactly right. You know, every article, every one of your stories that I've read has some, I'll call it a spiritual content, but not necessarily a religious content. You know, it's been my belief, and since we went on the mission field way over 20 years ago, that we need to take Christ out of the church and put him right in the middle of the community. And often he shows up in the forms of integrity, of diligence, of good nature, of good-hearted people. And sometimes, you know, we need to question ourselves about where we come from. And I've noticed your stories have done that type of thing. And for that reason, I really appreciate the stories. They're amusing. They're fun to read. Like you said, they're short, 20 minutes in and out. It's good. It's what people want nowadays. But the other side is they leave you with something. And I think that's a good thing.
I wrote a story in the first book, Bogachota Flats, and the name of it was On the Third Day, The Bird. And somehow the story wandered up to Mississippi and Jacksonville, as a matter of fact. And I got a call one day from a minister, And he said, Mr. Case, I've been given the magazine with your story in it, or the book with your story in it. I think it was the magazine, actually. And he said, do you realize how much religious content is in that story? I said, what are you talking about? He said, on the third day. He said, that's biblical. And I said, well, I've got to be honest with you. I didn't know that. I mean, I know about the third day. I understand sure. the third day. Sure. I went to church every Sunday. I know what the third day is, but I didn't write it with that intent. But he said, do you mind if I use it as a basis of my sermon? And I said, absolutely not. I said, I'm flattered, you know. So anyway, sometimes we do things unknowingly. We entertain angels unaware.
Hmm? Well, you know, if Christ is a normal part of our life, it's just we live for Christ. We're part of the kingdom of God. It just flows out. It doesn't take a theological degree to see Christ in many things. And the goodness of mankind, the goodness of heart, the disappointments of life, overcoming challenges, all of those things are... Some people call it religion. I don't have much to say about religion, but I have a whole lot to say about being a Christian and following what Christ taught us to do. And I appreciate that. And thanks for adding that. That was a great little story.
Well, you know, if you look at both of my books, I expect there's at least a half a dozen stories that have to do with church, at least,
absolutely.
Maybe more.
Yes.
And be honest with you, some of them aren't necessarily flattering. You know, because everything that happens in the church is not always flattering.
Exactly.
But the point is...
There's people in the church.
There are people in the church. That's right. There's people there. But at any rate, I spent a lot of time growing up. I grew up in what was considered a fundamentalist church then. It was the Church of Christ. And my grandfather was a minister. And I remember, and people don't believe this, but in the summertime, we would have revival meetings. They call them protracted meetings in those days. And if you wanted other churches to come to your meeting, you had to go to theirs.
That's right.
And they were always in the summertime. And there's been many summers that in a two-week period, I went to 16 services. No air conditioning.
It was
murderous. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm not sure that I really got a lot of religion there, but I spent a lot of time looking for it.
One of the things that I think the readers all love is when you describe those moments, when you describe being in those church tents and how descriptive your narrative is with the mosquitoes and the heat, and you could feel it. You could smell it. You can feel the wetness of the humidity and all of his descriptive narrative that goes along with it. And it really puts the reader there, because none of us in Slidell, Louisiana, as far as I know, at least not my age, would experience that kind of tent revival thing. I can't imagine anything like that going on over here. But this is something that in southern Mississippi in the 50s and 60s was an all-the-time occurrence.
Exactly, exactly.
Bob, you may need to edit this, but here's a passage from the story of the revival. And it's talking about going to church with wooden benches that had slats, you know, where there was a space between them. I remember Clovis Bankston. He probably weighed 325 pounds, and there was not much muscle. In fact, most of the weight was in his behind. One time, when I was about 3 or 4 years old, I was squirming during the service, and I worked my way to the floor. I could not believe that in front of me, and only inches away, Mr. Bankston's butt was protruding through the slatted bench. I suppose I was frightened, and I loudly interrupted the service. I said, Mama, Mr. Clovis's butt is going to leak on the floor. Mother rushed me from the sanctuary. True story, by the way.
Oh, great description, great description. Well, that comes from your new book, Saucered Coffee, Blued and Cold.
Cool.
Talk to me about that. What does that mean, saucered coffee, blued and cool?
Bob, there's a saying that I've told so many lies in my life that I start believing them. And I guess you could say that's one of them. I remember at a very young age, one very, very cold day in Brookhaven, Mississippi, my mother hurried me into a little diner. It was actually just a trailer-type diner, and ordered some hot chocolate. And as I remembered, there was a gentleman sitting, and when he came, it was too hot to drink. There was a gentleman with a long beard sitting over there, and he turned around and he handed the coffee that he had poured in his saucer and said, here you go, miss, it's been cooled and blued. And of course this old nasty beard was dripping in the thing, and mother just almost ran. The truth is, I think that was true, but I've read in researching this book, it seems to have happened to everybody in all parts of the country. So I don't really guess it happened to me. Yeah, and the picture that we reenacted was taken at what's now the wine garden. It was the old Slidell Cleaners.
Okay, yeah.
And playing the part of my mother is my daughter-in-law, Katie, and me is played by my grandson, Henry. And the old man with the beard is the commercial fisherman and longtime Slidellian, Jim Lamarck.
Interesting. Well, your book is out. It's your second book. I see you're doing signings and different events and speaking. What's the reception? What's the response from the community for your second book?
Well, two things have happened. Number one, the response has been good, but it has also created a rebirth of the first book. In fact, behind you, there's a box with about 9 copies of Bogart Cheddar Flats.
Uh-huh.
That's all. That's really? All there is.
Really?
We've printed twice already. This will be the third printing.
Awesome.
So it's. But back to this book, Saucered Coffee. It came at a time when I was not able to promote it and Kendra was not able to promote it. It's done well. I got a real honor. I was asked to be the MC at the inaugural ceremonies for the mayor of Slidell, Mayor Greg Cromer. And in the audience was the lieutenant governor. And he came to me afterwards and says, look, I want you in front of thousands of people. And Louisiana is having what's called the Louisiana State Book Festival. And it's going to be the 10th of November. And they choose speakers to be in auditoriums. And these people are famous. Well, he said, that's where I want you to be. And I got a call from the people who run it, and they said the governor doesn't realize we booked those last year, you know, but we would like for you to be there. And
oh,
so
wow.
I'm going to be. I think I'm going to be seated next to General Honoré
on
the walk.
Really?
Don't know for sure, but that's what they tell me.
Awesome.
So that was a real nice honor, too.
I've known you for a long time, and I've not known you as a person who promotes himself.
I'll do that. I mean, I've learned you have to, Bob. I've learned you have to.
But in humility, you speak out. And I think both of us recognize that if there be a gift, and there is a gift, that all of our gifts come from God, and he expects us to be good stewards of that which he gives us to be able to use.
One of the things that everyone enjoys with John's books, when they read it, if they've ever heard him speak and if they've ever been to one of his readings, they go back home with the book, and as they're reading it, they can hear John. They can hear that Southern, educated Southern accent. They can hear the breathiness in his speech. They hear a speech pattern, which is very melodic, and it actually has a rhythm to his speech pattern, born of his Southern heritage, and they can hear the way that he says the words. It makes the reading experience that much richer. So when we have book readings, we'll have the same people, same exact people sometimes, come out almost groupies. I tell John all the time, you're the Slidell Elvis. there are these women, particularly older women, who love to come and listen to him because he's going to read a different story, and they'll go back home and reread it, but they're hearing him when they reread it.
Bob, those people who read my stuff, if you have to tell somebody something, you haven't accomplished what you want to accomplish. But I have tried to change my mode of writing to the fact that they're not in the first person always like they used to be. I write in the third person a lot. And second of all, I let my characters write their own story. The story is as much a surprise to me, the writer, as it to you, the reader. I don't know where the story's going. And sometimes the character gets lost in telling the story. I've got 4 on my computer right now that I can't finish because you could say the spirit doesn't lead me, maybe. You know, well, the character doesn't lead me. I would kind of like to read this 2-page story to you. It's a little bit about what I'm doing, and I think Kendra may disagree, but almost always, in fact, I just got a letter this morning I could show you that says this is their favorite story, and okay. It's very, very simple.
We want to encourage our listeners right now to stop what you're doing, kind of lean back, close your eyes, and let John Case tell you a story. What's the name of it, John?
The story, the name is The Writer. And it comes from page 241 of saucered coffee blued and cooled. And the prescript says, he was told that he should enter his work in a literary contest. He decided he would. Not just any contest, the Hemingway contest, one of the best. The rules said the story had to be fiction and no more than 500 words long. Maybe Daniel had a midlife crisis early. It happened when he was 40 years old. That was 5 years ago. The decision to give up your profession, your financial security, and in this case even more, cannot be taken lightly. It was what he wanted to do then, but on this day, as on other occasions, he wondered if he had made a mistake. He wanted to be a writer, not a part-time writer or a hobby writer, but a professional writer. He had dreamed of a best-selling novel with royalties from movie rights. That hadn't happened. There was some success. A number of his short stories had been published in major magazines, and he was a guest columnist in a statewide newspaper, and, from time to time, he got paid for a few speaking engagements. It made a living, but barely. He had gone to all the writing workshops, taken creative writing courses, and followed all the instructions as best he could. He kept a list of the things that all writers should do. The first was to write something every day. This he did religiously. Sometime, he would write the end of a story and have no idea of the beginning. At other times, he would write the beginning with no idea of the ending. It pleased him that after months, an idea would bloom, and he could add a pertinent beginning or ending to those story fragments. Most of the time, he had to suppress what his mind wanted to dwell on. He promised himself he would not write about her. That would hurt too bad. No place for negatives in his life now. She was not willing to follow his dream. Thoughts of her would be disruptive. So far, profound words had never emanated from his keyboard. Nothing like Faulkner's, "The past is never dead, it is not even past," or Hemingway's, "Courage is grace under pressure." He would keep typing, and maybe today or tomorrow his fingers would tap out those words that had so far remained elusive. On this day, his mind was blank, more barren than usual. No golden words, exciting literary ideas, or plots came forth. He looked back at the list of things writers should do. First, have a comfortable place to work. He moved his desk away from the window. Maybe the outdoors distracted him. She'd always loved being outdoors. Next on the list was to think about a real person and fictionalize some aspect of their life or their personality, like literally drawing a caricature. The likeness is there, but only an outline. He left his desk and moved to the front porch. There he made a list of all the people that had influenced his life. Hers was the first on the list. He scratched through it, and then he added it back. He returned to his desk, and then he remembered. He remembered the first day of the first writer's conference he had ever attended. The speaker said, "Above all things, write what you know about." He knew about her. He called her. They talked. They met. They made no promises. Postscript. The story had 542 words, not 500. He didn't win. He was disqualified. Next week, the movie will premiere in his hometown. She will sit by his side.
Wow. What a great story.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you. I've enjoyed that story. And it's one that laid around for a long, long time. It laid around for, I don't know, a long time before it got finished.
Awesome. Well, where do we go from here, John?
Well, Kendra and I talk about that a lot, where we're going. I think that every time I write a story, I think it's my last one, you know, and then something comes up. And we do have a Christmas one we haven't published yet, so we'll have a Christmas story coming in the magazine. We're going to have another story that I had planned, actually, to enter into the Hemingway contest, but I did not, and I'm going to publish it. It's going to be called Hay. It goes back to when we used to lift hay on the wagons, you know?
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's called Hay. I've got to clean it up because it was not written for family. But I don't know, Bob. I'm enjoying what I do. I'm enjoying the cemetery tours. I want to throw that in and tell your listening audience that if they'll call the office, 643-1234, we will put you on a list and let you know when the next tour will be. They're free. There's no charge to them. And it takes about an hour, and you must be ambulatory. It's at Greenwood Cemetery, and it's on Wednesdays usually. But if you get a group of five or more, I'll do it, if I can, almost any time.
Great. Well, John, thank you for your contribution to Slidell, and thank you for putting Slidell first.
Thanks a bunch, Bob. I always enjoy you. And like I said, we've been friends for 40 years.
Probably,
and,
yeah.
Kind of from the same roots, too.
Yeah, yeah. My daddy was born in Brookhaven and came to New Orleans. And there's some Case back in our blood somewhere. So way to go, cuz.
Thank you, bud. Have a good one.
Thank you, John. Appreciate you. And thank you, Slidell, for tuning in to Voices here on Grace Radio today. We want to hear from you. You can give us a call at 985-250-1037. Leave us a comment, send us a text. We'd love to hear from you. Encourage you to like us on Facebook, Grace Radio Slidell. Check our website, www.graceradioslidell.net. There you can make tax-deductible gifts to support the station. We appreciate your support. It keeps us on the air. And again, the number to call is 985-250-1037. Well, that's it for now. Join us again for Voice of Slidell Daily at 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. and get in the flow of God's grace here in Slidell.